The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Time to push your mission to your mind, your mind to your mission. He's Michael Coleman. He has been a pro, and he's been with nonprofits. He's done the Jimmy Hell Mission now, of course, the Montgomery Food Bank, and he does a show every single week. It airs right here every single week on Wednesdays, live on Tony Curry Radio, the TKR app. Thanks to tens of thousands of folks that listen to us live every single week. We love that. And if you want to go back and listen to any previous shows, go to Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, the Tony Curry Radio podcast platform. You can listen to all the previous shows. He is Michael Cohen. Michael, how you doing, brother? Everything good?
Yeah, I was just, we were talking before we went on the air. You know, when you come in a new job, it's all new challenges, but man, I love the challenge. I get up excited every day to get to come to work because I know we're making an impact in somebody's life, and we're just trying to see how we can do that the best we can to impact the most people we have the opportunity to.
See, and I know you're a very organizational guy. I know your heart, and now over a month at the Montgomery Food Bank, and obviously a wonderful organization that carries 35 counties in the state all over the place. So a month into this, is it about what you thought you were going to have to work with? Because I know you're an improver, man. You're a risk taker. You're a guy that wants to take this thing to another level. Is it about where you thought it was going to be? Any surprises?
Well, it's not so much the Montgomery Area Food Bank, because I'm going to tell you, I'm so impressed at our employees. I'm so impressed at their dedication. I mean, they come in every single day just striving to get food in the hands of those who are suffering from food insecurities. As I dig down, oftentimes though, it's I found across food banks, but it's not even all nonprofits. It's just over time we get satisfied in doing something that is good. But we don't have as many people in organizations always asking, how do we keep the momentum going? In other words, how do we achieve excellence or just pursue excellence? I mean, for that to be part of our culture, you can never be satisfied with where you are. You always have to be looking ahead. And it's not that you don't enjoy meeting people and helping people. It's not that you don't have goals. You know, you want to have achievable goals, you achieve those goals. But the bottom line is if we say, hey, we want to do this better, and we get better on some things, and then if I were to take my foot off the gas, then the bottom line is the staff is not equipped to put their foot on the gas if me as the leader. So, and you just see this, it's just human nature to come in, and you know, you may start fast, but after a while you kind of settle in, and then you kind of just are, you don't do anything extra, you don't do anything worse, you just kind of find a sweet spot, and then you just carry that on day after day. The real thing that I've seen is you lose the heart of your staff lots of times because they're there because they are passionate, and when they see a leader who's uninspired, then they become uninspired. And so it's a reminder to me that I have to always be looking out for that, to not let complacency settle in. And so I always come in as a, you know, I've said it over and over and over. I tend to think strategically, which means everything in the organization has to be working towards the same goal. And one of the things, and forgive me if I'm repeating myself on the show.
You're good.
But one of the things I told people is, if you don't know where you want the entire organization to go, and you don't know where every department fits into that plan, then you run into a lot of challenges. I'll just give you a couple. One is, people don't know how to make decisions out of something. Leaders in your organization don't know how to make a proper decision if they don't know what the end state is, what you're trying to get to. And so I want my leaders to be thinking innovatively. I want them to think, oh, wait a minute, you know what? This is our normal standard, but you know what? It makes a lot more sense to do it this way because we're trying, that will help us get to our end state. If they don't see the end state, then they're just going to follow what the SOP is And I don't want a bunch of people who are just following a bunch of rules. I want people who know how to apply the rules and also think about how do we do this better. And but the other thing is there's so many products out there. There's so many software systems. There's so many things that are that. And so you have to decide, well, all of them in and of themselves are good. But as I evaluate new things, I always ask the question, okay, we're trying to build conduits between us and the people in these communities, especially rural communities, where there just aren't a lot of agencies out there. And so does this software or does this program or does this job position, whatever it is, how does it help me further build that pipeline? And if the answer is it doesn't, it may be a good program in and of itself, but it's not for us. So a strategy can give you a framework of what new programs you need, what new processes you need, what new systems you need, what personnel, what staff. But without the end state in mind, then you've just got a bunch of people just getting through the day, doing their best. It's not an indictment on the person, but they come in and they, you know, they look at a forest of fires and they're like, okay, it's the flames are hotter on this end. Let's start here. And you're just putting out fires all day long. What I'd rather think is way more strategically and get to the point, instead of putting out fires, we're able to get to the point where we come in and we can anticipate the fires. So I would like it if we could come in, there's no fires, and you say, oh, you know what? There's a gas can over there next to that flame. Let's go ahead and separate those breaks out.
There you go.
And so that's what drives me is how do we always turn these dynamics around to where instead of us being reactionary, we can be proactive in addressing some of these critical issues in our community.
Michael Coleman with the Mission Minded that airs every single Wednesday right here. And we love doing this at noon and 7 live right here on Tony Curry Radio on the TKR app. Download the app. It's classic rock to the bone 24 hours a day outside these wonderful shows. 13 shows we have now. One of the other shows that we do here is called Dark Side of the Pooch. And I was recording it earlier this afternoon, Michael, and I was talking to Dr. Rab Stewart, who's the veterinarian out there. And I was asking him about the pandemic. So many people have adopted dogs because during the pandemic, everyone was home. And so the puppy ownership just went through the roof through the pandemic. Now with the housing crisis we're having, there's a lot of people who are being evicted out of their homes. They can't afford their homes because of inflation. And they're having to move into apartments where they don't allow pets. And so we're having an influx of fostering and adoptive situations for all these animals that are wanting a good home. My roundabout question here is, based on what you see month to month at the Montgomery Food Bank, and I realize you've only been there, but you were with the Jimmy Hale Mission. You saw an influx certainly around the holidays when it got really cold or when it got really hot. But you could certainly see if more and more people were coming to the Jimmy Hale Mission, there's something going on in our economy. How do you use those predictors? Can you allow yourself to, how far ahead in advance do you realize, hey, listen, I have a feeling because of inflation, recession, everything going on, that we're going to have a much bigger need for more food to the food bank? And how do you adjust those numbers?
Yes, man, that's a great question. So part of it is you, again, you have to have so let's say if I'm coming in every day and I'm just putting out fires. Well, then the new fire may be, oh, by the way, we have a higher percentage of our population due to inflation and now in poverty that's going to food banks. And let me just talk about this just for a second. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you've always, we talked about last week about somebody showing up, you know, in a nice car because they had a job 6 months ago, but they got laid off and now they, you know, or had an accident and can't work. And, you know, it's just lots of reasons. And think about it, if you've been self-sufficient your whole life and then you have to swallow your pride and stand in a food bank line. I mean, that is, it would be hard for me. My pride would bother me to no end, but sometimes you get to the point to where you literally don't have any option for you or your spouse and your children. And so I feel like that's just one more reason to why, you know, we look out and we see the framework of our society and we know the economy goes in waves. And so, you know, this isn't political for me. This isn't, this is Biden's fault or it was Trump's fault or, you know, the bottom line is we're going through a cycle of inflation and other people can figure out all the whys. What I have to do is look out over the landscape of the people we serve and say, what's the impact on us and what's the impact on those that we're trying to serve? And the bottom line is, when you have food at higher cost and you have a little bit more food scarcity that's in the systems, because, you know, you've seen a lot about Ukraine and trying to get wheat out. And so there's a worldwide shortage on some things. We see it every once in a while. It'll crop up in our grocery stores to where it's tough to get a certain product. Well, that certainly affects the food chains through the food banks and Feeding America as well. We suffer those same kind of challenges. So the bottom line is I have to, if I'm anticipating the need increasing, is I have to already start the planning process and not wait till more people are banging down the agency doors or you know, crying in the streets. I have to go ahead and be planning on how to address that need, even though the need may not be right in front of me at the moment.
That's a great great answer, and obviously a lot of people are going to be going through that right now, and I just don't think that people realize just how expensive it is getting to the point. And we talked last week about the nutritional value. My fear is that a lot of people, you know, fattening food's cheaper.
That's right.
You know, and I mean, I think a lot of people probably are foregoing the organic right now and going back to the canned stuff just because it's a little cheaper. And by doing that, it's also going to affect, you know, our physical well-being as well. This is Mission Minded, keeping your mind, your mission, your mind. Michael Coleman, of course, with the Montgomery Food Bank, formerly of the Jimmy Hill Mission, does a fantastic job. We got lots of emails I want to get into. And of course, we read them all. They go across the gamut here. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can also go to our website, TonyCurryRadio.net, become a bonehead and leave your emails there. Scott in Birmingham wants to know, what's the difference between a food bank, a food pantry, and a soup kitchen?
Okay, so yeah. Very interesting. So a food bank is an organization. Of course, we're like other nonprofits, 501c3s, but we are recognized through the Feeding America system as a food bank. And so Feeding America is the second largest charitable organization in the United States and the number one in terms of food distribution. So they have a network of over 200 food banks. And so they look out over each state and they make sure there's a food bank. So all of Alabama, for instance, every bit of Alabama is assigned to a food bank. And that's that way in every state. And there's different mechanisms for that. Like, you know, we have what's called partnering distribution, like smaller food banks that we distribute down to. But now an agency, so let's say we have 12 counties that report directly to us. Now we're responsible for 35 counties, but those other counties go through our partnering distribution organizations, but we're still responsible for getting food to those. Mm-hmm. And as far as Feeding America is concerned, even though those are our PDOs, we're the food bank over those 35 counties. So the best pathway for us to distribute that food is an agency. And that could be a church, it could be a nonprofit, it could be a community hub. There's lots of different ways to go about setting that up. But the idea is they come and order food from us, we supply it to them, and then they take it and they're dealing with the individuals in their community. And this is where this is a real challenge, because when you look out sometimes in some counties that may be rural parts of counties, of our 12 counties that we serve, it's maybe well over an hour's drive to here. And if you're talking about a poor county that doesn't have a lot of resources, the cost of coming here, there's a shared handling fee with food and trying to get food all the way back out there. And then it may be a tiny little church in the community, but they may be the only agency for, you know, 10, 15 square, 20, 25 square miles out there. And so, and there's some, and that's what we're looking at right now, is we're looking at these kind of food desert areas where they don't have grocery stores. So somebody, and they don't even have agencies set up to be able to impact these communities. So let's say you have somebody who's very, very poor, has no means, doesn't have their own transportation, but even if they did, they might have to drive one way, you know, 30 miles to the nearest grocery store. and the nearest agency may be 20 miles away. So you just begin to see why those choices are so difficult. And then you've got seniors that are involved in that that don't have family that's looking after them. We do see there's senior supplement boxes and a couple of different senior programs. We just recognize that that's a huge challenge, and the government does as well. So we're focused on child nutrition, nutrition for the elderly, and also just for families. But you begin to see the enormous challenge of 12 counties, and a lot of those counties are so remote and but just don't have agencies for miles and miles and miles. And so we're trying to build pipelines into those areas, and that's where the agency comes in. So we have to proactively recruit agencies, help stand them up, help supply them. And then you said a soup kitchen. So a soup kitchen, you see, typically is where they serve hot meals, where anybody can come and get a hot meal. Now, you will see this lots of times in homeless shelters, but you also have community centers all over Alabama, and where somebody who is elderly, or typically that's who goes to these community centers. They're not a homeless center. They're a community center typically for elderly, and they'll serve hot lunches where if an elderly person can't cook for themselves, if they can get down to that center, and lots of times there'll be buses or vans. Every community is different, but they go get a hot meal. And I wouldn't even call a community center a soup kitchen. But that's typically more aligned with what you think of in homeless shelters. But it's still a community feeding program that's serving hot meals. And so that's a little bit of the breakdown. There's a lot of other stuff that goes with that. But the soup kitchens might get food from us, or these community agencies might get food from the food bank. But they would only get food that you could prepare. The typically most agencies are dry goods that they can then sack up or box up and give to those in need.
That's a perfect answer, because our next email here, Tracy in Gardendale, wanted to know about, and I did this for my dad, Meals on Wheels. He was going through cancer, lost his wife, and I knew he wasn't eating right. He was running down and eating Wendy's three times a day. And I was like, Dad, you need to get some good nutrition in your body. So we did Meals on Wheels. Tracy wants to know, is Meals on Wheels part of the food bank, or is its own identity?
It's its own identity. I will tell you, and again, this is one of those things where every community is different. So when I was at Jimmy Hale, we did Meals on Wheels food preparation 2 days a year, so that they could take a break on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we had the facility, so we did it and got volunteers to come and deliver those meals. And 1 year I was there, we did over 500 meals.
Wow.
When I came to Montgomery, there's a couple of different ways. One is MACOA, which is the Montgomery Area Aging on Council on Aging, and they deliver 400 something meals every single day, excuse me, to residents in the area counties. But then in these counties, part of is through this, there's a state agency for senior that covers senior services. And so that's where lots of times they'll get funding for these community centers to be able to do hot meals, but they may get the food from us. So yeah, I mean, you have to understand the government's working hand in hand with nonprofits like Feeding America and the local food banks to try to address a huge need. And I think if until people encounter this with their own parents aging or grandparents, you really don't even think about how all this comes together. But you really see once you peel that back and you look underneath of all the agencies that are required to keep all our citizens fed and not just putting something in front of them, but something nutritious. It's a huge logistical challenge. It's a huge financial challenge. And there's people that fight that fight every day because we're passionate about helping others. So, yeah, a lot to learn, but I hope that answers your question.
Spot on. And as much as my dad appreciated the meal, he appreciated someone knocking on his door and just speaking with him for a few minutes. It was the same guy. His name was Jerry. He did it for 3 years. And so my dad expected him three times a week. And sometimes it's good to check on the elderly, too, just to have a quick conversation with them and make sure they're okay as well.
That's a great conversation to have as well. You get into the psychology of somebody who is alone. And again, you know, I was not able to always take care of my mother, you know, be there personally for her. She went to a community center. This is before she passed. Just the way we are now, we're all over the country, and we need that local touch of somebody checking on the well-being of the family. So I'm really a fan of Meals on Wheels because it gives them contact. It gives them communication with other humans. And lots of times those agencies are able to identify serious needs that the children can't, because the children just can't be there on a regular basis always. So,
yes, sir.
And they do great things, yeah.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can send your emails and we'll read them. Tippy in Frankfort, Kentucky said, can someone request to be a board member on a specific non-for-profit? And she's like, there's a non-for-profit that I really want to be a board member on, but I don't know anybody there. And if, in fact, you can, how do you go about that? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you, every board has what they call bylaws, or every organization has bylaws. And in those bylaws, they govern, they determine, it's a self-determining how they go about the process of getting new board members. And so what I would encourage you to do is, if you're really excited about a nonprofit and maybe you've volunteered for them, is I would schedule an appointment with the executive director or the CEO, and I would go in and say, hey, I'm just very impressed at your organization. I feel like I could be able to add by coming and being part of your board. I'm very interested in having that discussion. And then just find out what specific requirements they have for you. And it may be, hey, we're full right now. We're going to be looking at new board members in a year or 2 years. They may be saying, hey, these are some, we're looking for board members, but we're looking for specific things that they can bring to the board. But they'll share all that with you and communicate with you. But I think it's always helpful, because lots of times when it's time to add board members, then you have to sit back and go, okay, who would be a good board member? I love the idea that somebody, you know, would come up to me and say, hey, here's my, I would take them a resume, show them everything that you could bring to the board. And I'd say, here's my resume. I love your organization. I would love the opportunity and privilege to serve on the board, and just want to talk about that. And so yeah, nothing wrong with that in the world.
We get an email about once a week about this, and you've answered it numerous times, but it always comes up. And I bring it up because my daughter, who's got a heart of gold, will see a homeless person underneath an overpass, and she'll want to stop and help that person. That's what kids do, right? They're like, this person, and normally it's around the holidays, and you're like, can we please stop and give that guy a ride? And I said, he may not want a ride. We're not sure what he wants, and he may not be panhandling or handling by a street light or something like that. But Tim in Fort Payne says, what's Michael's thoughts on seeing someone that will be handing a basket out, or, you know, will work for food sign in his hands? Does it frustrate Michael? Does he actually reach out? Is he proactive? Is that, or is it a situation where these people know that there's help out there, they just don't want it?
So this is one of those answers. Maybe that's why they keep asking, because I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
Because there's not a one size fits all. So let me explain what I mean by that. There are times, and I'll give you just a really good example. I was leaving a coffee shop the other day, and there was a really old African-American woman who approached me and asked me for a dollar. Mm-hmm. And here's the bottom line, is my heart just hurt for this lady. She looked like whatever she'd been through. I don't know if it's drugs. I don't know if it's alcohol. I don't know if she's just been, I mean, I don't know what's happened to her, but she's led a hard life. And so I reached in my wallet and gave her some money. Not because I thought it would change her life, but it was just because my heart was hurting for her. Now, I'm entirely unsympathetic, however, when I see young men, especially young men, More times than not, I've still tried to stop and help them, but I don't help them by giving them money. I tend to engage them in conversation. Now, I would say I don't put that out for everybody, because let me tell you something. Addicts and most of the people who are young and are on the street begging are addicts or have some mental health issues. And addicts are the best manipulators. They have an answer for anything you say, because their goal is just to get money. They're just looking for their next fix. However, sometimes people just say, well, the spirit led me to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to tell you not to do that. If your heart, you know, some people say, well, I just felt this in my heart and I felt better by giving it to them. Then you, by all means, I'm not going to tell you not to go get your conscience or go get your heart. What I want you to understand is that's not going to aid in their long-term recovery. I mean, it's just getting them. It may pay for drugs. It may pay for their next meal, but it's not going to do anything constructive long-term. As long as you understand that and operate within that framework, I always think it's better. I try to approach them and try to talk to them about finding out a place to go. And I will tell you, if you do engage them, and the first thing I would do is find out the resources that are available in your community. And then I would say, it doesn't take you long to figure out who's interested in help. If somebody really wanted help and you'd say, hey, I've told them, I said, hey, I'm the director at Jimmy Hill Mission. And they would, oh, there's too many fights. I'm like, well, I've been there for 2 years. There's never been a fight. And, oh, well, I can't go, you know, no, just they have a reason for everything you throw out.
Yep.
And that's not somebody who wants help. If somebody wanted help and they were hungry and they were tired, I'm like, I can give you a nice warm bed. I can give you 3 meals a day. People would jump on that. Man, that sounds great. I would love to get a hot shower and 3 meals a day. But the truth of the matter is, it's just part of the homeless culture. But I don't want you to take that information and say, well, Eric, Michael says, Eric, don't help the homeless, because every homeless is just an addict. I'm not saying that at all. So you just have to use wisdom. I would never encourage anybody to engage that puts you in a vulnerable position, especially if you don't have experience dealing with people with severe mental health and be able to recognize some of those signs. If you've not dealt with people in addiction and understand how manipulative they are, and that's just the state of addiction. All addicts are that way. So it's complicated. Just understand, I'm not discouraging you not to help. Just understand you're helping maybe for a few minutes. But the long-term help is about helping them connect with an agency that can actually begin the process of lifting them off the streets permanently. Now, for me at Jimmy Hill Mission, it was doing the addiction recovery. It was like, hey, we're going to house you. We're going to feed you. But we're going to do it in a relationship, and we're going to bring accountability to that relationship. And I'm going to love you dynamically and give you everything you need to be successful. You just have to agree to go through our program and make a good effort. And there were some that walked away. They said, no, I'm not looking for a program. I'm like, well, I love you, but you can't stay here. And they would choose to leave. So when people are like that, there is no help available for them. That you have to let them hit bottom. I counsel families so many times, and I said, I know you love them, but you have to let them hit bottom. Now, is there a chance they could die before they hit bottom? Absolutely. But there's no alternative. Yeah. You know, and it's sad and it's tough and it's frustrating and it breaks your heart. But sometimes you cannot force a human being to do something they absolutely are not going to do.
That is true. He's Michael Coleman. This is Mission Minded. Keep your mind your mission your mind. We do it every Wednesday right here at noon and 7 o'clock. And, of course, you can hear us through Spotify and through Audio Boom, wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Tony Curry Radio, just to pull up Tony Curry Radio or Mission Minded with Michael Coleman, and to check out all of our previous shows. And we're going to be expanding our shows as well. So we're going to be playing Mission Minded more than twice a week coming up here in the next couple of weeks. So we're super excited about that as well. Michael, as always, man, thank you so much. I appreciate you, brother, and I love you. And we'll catch up next week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it already.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.